Shows Live and Local, it's your connection to local music and more. And on the program today, I'll be talking with Angie Chase, who is a member of the Handbell Ensemble based in Springfield called Bells in Motion. They're giving concerts this weekend in Springfield and Bloomington. And also giving concerts in those same two cities is the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Karen Lynn Deal. It's her last concert with the orchestra. She wraps up her music directorship this weekend, and I'll talk with her in the second portion of the program. Hope you'll stay with us. We just heard, a tune you might well have recognized, It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing, made popular by the Duke Ellington Band, and performed here by Bells in Motion, who are a professional handbell ensemble based in Springfield, Illinois. They're going to be giving their spring concerts this weekend, Saturday in Bloomington and Sunday in Springfield. And on the phone with me now, from Springfield, is Angie Chase, somebody I've known for a long time, and you seem to get Angie some of the at least the radio marketing duties.
Yes,
here.
I do. They have been increasingly growing every year.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Is that official or is that sort of passive?
It has been unofficial for a while, and it is increasingly becoming more and more official.
But you're not paid to do this.
I am not paid extra, no, to do that, no.
And is that because you actually have a marketing role or because you always do a good job on the conversation? So let's get Angie to do it.
One thing is because I know you already.
Oh, well, there you go.
But the other thing is that I enjoy speaking with people about what we do, and I enjoy writing as well. I do all the press releases and help with making the flyers and things like that to help promote our group. So public relations is just one of the things that I really enjoy about my involvement with Bells in Motion.
Well, one of the things that one has to do, if there's any basis in reality for a statement like this, is say things like you do in the very first sentence, join Bells in Motion, the nationally renowned handbell ensemble.
That is true.
What makes you nationally renowned?
Well, we have a wide following in the handbell world. We are known in all the handbell choirs around the world and in the nation for performing the jazz and pop genre on handbells. And we're actually one of the groups that kind of sort of started that trend. And so as far as the people in the handbell world, we definitely are known for that. We have also gone on some tours around the country and around the world as well.
How big is this handbell world for you to be so well known?
The handbell world, oh my gosh. If you were to go on Google and type in handbell choirs, a myriad of websites will come up. Thousands of people are involved in handbell choirs and groups, both in church and in community groups. It's a really interesting little niche in American music.
Well, I've always thought of it as a church-based thing. How common has it become to be outside of church?
It really is becoming more and more common. I think that most people start out in church, but then if for some reason they find out there's a community group in their area, they like to explore that too, because a lot of times the community groups play more secular music, and that kind of extends the repertoire that is available to play for bells. It's really neat.
Did Bells in Motion get started in church?
It actually did. Michael Lamb, our director at his church, was directing his bell choir, and he had this brainstorm back in 1997 to try to form a community group. I believe he and three or four other people in that church group got asked to play at some community event one summer, and then they did that, and they enjoyed it so much that they kind of said, hey, we can do this a little bit more often, and it just kind of grew into what's Bells in Motion now. It's really neat.
And how long did it take to you haven't entirely jettisoned sacred pieces, but for the most part, I don't see them on your programs.
Right. We definitely do include sacred pieces in the repertoire, but the majority of our program is secular songs as well.
I'm looking at a photo on the back of your most recent CD, which is called Bronze Images, and I assume this is typical of what it looks like on stage. You've got the bells arrayed in a semicircle, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I count 13 ringers here, and then you have a bass player, drummer, and I can't tell what this one guy is doing.
The one guy in the back is playing the largest chimes that we have that go with the handbells. They're called hand chimes. And those particular hand chimes are so large that they are not played by picking them up and ringing them like a normal handbell, but they are on a stand played with mallets. And they're very low and provide a real resonance, almost like a double bass feel to a lot of our songs, and that actually accentuates the bass as well, the string bass that you see in that picture.
And does this guy specifically have the role of playing these low chimes?
No, not necessarily. We all rotate within the group. So on another song, that gentleman that you see in that picture might be playing the little tiny bells all the way up in the top. So I've gotten a chance to play those lower bells as well. So we all rotate, and we all know how to do each kind of bell and chime.
Is that so you don't get bored?
It is. That's part of it. A lot of it, too, is based on the repertoire. A lot of times the repertoire, certain parts in the music, certain places are more difficult than others. And so our director always matches up those specific parts within certain pieces to match the individual abilities of the ringers.
I know I've asked you this before in a previous conversation, but I've forgotten the answer, and if our listeners heard it, I'll bet they have too. But since you mentioned chimes, what's the difference between bells and chimes in this context?
The handbells are what most people think of when you think of a handbell choir. They are bell-shaped and made of bronze with a clapper in the middle and inside of it, inside of the bell, and we ring them with kind of a sort of a flicking of our wrist motion. The chimes are an outgrowth of bells, but they are, I'm not quite sure, to be honest, what they are made of, but they look metallic. They're not made of metal, but they might be. I'm not sure. But the clapper is just on the outside of the chime, and the chimes are more rectangular in shape. And they are actually a more affordable option for some church bell choirs. They, instead of going with bells, they purchase the chimes. They have a much more mellow sound, softer, and is actually a good option for children as well. They are much harder to damage than the bells are. So a lot of groups, though, like our group, will have both bells and chimes, and they sound wonderful together. And it makes a nice variety for the sounds and the tones in every piece we play when they have the both bells and chimes.
So you're able to use this sort of as a means of orchestration, so to speak.
Exactly. That is so correct. Yep.
Let's hear another tune here from Bells in Motion. This is one that you suggested to me that's not on any of the CDs I have. It's simply called Ballad. Who wrote this tune?
His name is William Payne, Bill Payne, and he wrote it actually for a wedding. It's kind of interesting. I'm not quite sure how long ago it was, but he wrote it for a wedding. So it has a really pretty loving beginning and end. In the middle, it's more dance-like. So it's kind of what you would picture when you go to a wedding and a reception.
And it's Bells in Motion, handbell ensemble based in Springfield, Illinois, who are going to be giving their spring concerts this weekend in Bloomington and Springfield. Angie Chase is my guest here on Live and Local, and this is called Ballad by William Payne. Tune is called Ballad, and Bells in Motion, the name of the ensemble, led by Michael Lamb. They're going to be playing at Wesley United Methodist Church in Bloomington Saturday evening at 7 o'clock, and at St. John's Lutheran Church in Springfield Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Angie Chase is a member of the ensemble and is with me on the phone from Springfield here on Live and Local. And you were just telling me as we were listening to that the composer is not the guy you said it was.
That is correct. I just checked the CD label to make sure, and the composer actually is Arnold Sherman of the ballad.
Okay, well yeah. Then, who's William Payne?
He's another composer. And a lot of times their pieces kind of sound similar to me, so that's probably why I said that.
I'm looking at here in your press release and noticed that, you do these combinations of what you call pops tunes, but arrangements of tunes that people will know, and also original compositions, by which you mean original compositions for handbell or original compositions for bells in motion?
What we have done in the past is that we have taken jazz standards such as I Got Rhythm and In the Mood and have commissioned arrangements of those for bells.
And the other ones are somebody else's arrangements that you're just picking up on?
Correct, yeah, correct.
Who does the arranging for your group?
Just some of the well-known composers that Mike Lamb has had a connection with through all his affiliations through the handbell world.
And he doesn't do any of his own?
I don't
yet.
Believe so. I'm not sure. I will have to ask him that.
Yeah, well, yeah. He should give himself credit. I know that's something that I would never have the slightest idea what to do. I know plenty of conductors who arrange things.
Yeah, I have tried my hand at that, and my husband says that I'm really good at it. So I could never do it on the level of, you know, what we play. But for some of my church bell choirs that I've done, I actually have done some arrangements, and it's really fun.
Well, maybe if Mike says you do things really well, then you ought to do it for the group.
I should try sometime.
Have you showed him any of yours?
I have not, no.
Well, there you go. You could become famous.
Oh, well, I'm okay right where I am. Thank you.
I'm looking at some of the various places the ensemble has gone across the country and even in elsewhere in the world. Do you have favorite places you've performed? Or
well,
favorite events?
Me personally, I have not had a chance to travel extensively with the group, but I do know that the group had a grand time on all their European trips, and I've heard lots of stories about the beautiful places they played. I believe they played in England, and I've just gone around kind of in the Midwest, but, you know, in the regular concerts we've played in Illinois. But I definitely have heard a lot of fun stories about the beautiful places they have been.
So if you haven't gone, does that mean others probably haven't either? And so the overseas touring ensemble is typically smaller?
Well, that is correct. They do tour with at least 14 or 15, I think, for the bell groups, but we do actually, we have turnover in our group based on family situations, personal situations, and like myself, I've only been with the group for 3 years, and we've had some people who just joined last year, and we just haven't had a chance to do those kinds of things with the group yet. And some of the people who went on the European tours from, you know, 5 or 6 years ago have left the group as well. So just the turnover factor, I think, has affected that.
Let's hear another tune. This comes off of your bronze bells, right?
Mm-hmm. Bronze images.
Bronze images,
yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
Bronze images, mm-hmm. CD. And let's see, what did we decide we're going to play here? Oh, yeah, this is a great march called The Thunderer. Although I'm blanking on who wrote the thing.
Oh, that's a good question.
We're both going to look it up, huh?
Let me look at that up real quick here. That was written by John Philip Sousa.
Oh, it was this? Okay.
It was, and it was arranged by Kevin McChesney, who is a leading arranger and composer in the handbell world.
And it's Bells in Motion, the name of the ensemble, heard to hear actually from a live concert somewhere.
Yes, that is correct.
And Angie Chase, my guest, in advance of their weekend concerts coming up in Bloomington and Springfield. You're listening to Live and Local.
Thank you.
John Philip Sousa's march, The Thunderer, played by Bells in Motion, conducted by Michael Lamb. And they'll be playing concerts this weekend in Bloomington and Springfield. And Angie Chase is with me on the phone. Where, how does one go about getting tickets for these?
Tickets, it's very easy. You just show up.
Oh, well, it can't be easier than that.
It's very easy. You show up and you admission is $10 at the door, and then you're on your way to a wonderful evening.
And if anybody forgets what we said in this interview and wants more information on the group, what's your website?
The website is www.bellsinmotion.org.
And there's lots of information on there. And if somebody wants to buy your CDs, what do they do?
On our website is a link to what's called cdbaby.com, and they can purchase the CD through there.
CD Baby.
Also, cdbaby.com.
Right. And that's a group, that's a place that is generally for groups that have essentially copyrighted their own performances,
yes.
Their self-released CDs, right?
Correct.
Yeah. So it's a great way to find
the other way they can get our CD is to come to our concert.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
And you'll be happy to sell them one or two or three.
That would be wonderful, yeah.
And you've got two holiday CDs, essentially Christmas season CDs.
I believe we have one holiday CD, and I actually think we still have some of those available, too. Let me check this on my website real quick here. And that CD, the Sleigh Bell CD, can be an order form can be printed off of our website for that, and that can just be sent in to us to purchase the Sleigh Bell CD.
And the other one must be obsolete or something. It was called Ringing in the Season.
Ringing in the Season.
Maybe that was just from a concert CD.
I think that might have been a concert name.
Yeah. Well.
Yep. Yep.
So you can't get that, but I've got it in my hand. So
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. The Sleigh Bells Christmas CD is wonderful, so I would encourage people to check us out on the website about that one, too.
And, of course, we encourage people to go out and hear you if they got the time.
Of course.
It's Saturday at 7 o'clock, Wesley United Methodist Church on East Front Street in Bloomington. Sunday at 4 o'clock at St. John's Lutheran Church on West Washington in Springfield. And, again, the website, bellsinmotion.org. Angie, how about we go out with, this is a fun one, Bellhop Boogie and Blues.
That's wonderful.
Is this a popular tune that I don't remember the name of, or is this an original for handbells?
It is an original for handbells, yep.
And thanks for joining us on the show.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Have great concerts.
Thank you.
It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Thank you. piece performed by the Bells in Motion Handbell Ensemble called Bellhop Boogie. You can hear, well, I'm not sure if they're playing that on their concert, but they're playing some music like that and lots more on Saturday and Sunday in Bloomington and Springfield, respectively. Wesley United Methodist Church in Bloomington tonight at 7 o'clock and St. John's Lutheran Church in Springfield Sunday at 4 o'clock. Tonight in Bloomington is going to be the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, and tomorrow night they're playing as well in Springfield. And I'll be talking in just a few minutes with Karen Lynn Deal, who is the music director there, and this is, in fact, her last concert in that position. So it's her swan song, and we'll be hearing about her thinking about that program in just a couple minutes. Support for our show on Live and Local today comes in part from the Chorale, presenting a musical tribute to the Gift of Song, the 20th Annual Young Artist Scholarship Concert, this Saturday at 7 p.m. at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign. The program will feature winners of the 2011 Young Artists Scholarship Competition. We heard an excerpt from Debussy's wonderful symphonic poem, I guess is a reasonable way to call it, or tone picture, called La Mer, or the Sea, and the middle section, which is called Play of the Waves. Pierre Boulez was conducting the Cleveland Orchestra, and you can hear the Illinois Symphony Orchestra perform the complete work at concerts in Bloomington and Springfield tomorrow, today and Saturday evening. Bloomington and Springfield in that order. And with me is the conductor of the orchestra, Karen Lynn Deal, and this is your swan song, I guess.
I guess it is. Yeah, this is the last one.
At the end of 11 years with the symphony, has it been?
Yes. It's flown.
I imagine so. What would you say has been different about, I mean, there's many things that are different, but maybe enlighten our audience, from being a music director of an orchestra like the Illinois Symphony and being an associate conductor of an orchestra like the Nashville Symphony, which is where you were before you were here?
Yeah. It's very different, but for varying reasons. I mean, in one job, in this job, as music director, all the decisions are, you know, stop with me, the buck stops here. So all of the repertoire, the artistic choices, the soloists, all of that sort of thing, and the responsibility is much greater because you are alone in that position. In Nashville, the music director was up in years.
Was that Kenneth Skirmerhorn?
Yes,
at the time?
He's since died. But it was just the two of us, and it was a full-time orchestra. And we played, I think it was 46 weeks a year. And so, you know, we had two rehearsals every day of every week for 46 weeks with usually one or two days off during a week. And so it was like getting up and going to work at a regular job where you see the same people all the time and you're making music every day. And I conducted, you know, over 100 concerts there, combined with the opera and the ballet. And so I was doing a lot more conducting there with a orchestra at a higher level. But some of the decisions I was making and some of the decisions I wasn't making. Here, there are far fewer concerts. The orchestra is not full-time. They're professionals, but they're not full-time. And so I only see them about once a month, and I only see them for about 4 or 5 days a month. And so they come in, and we do it very, very quickly. So there's a lot of pressure with this job to do, excellent concerts very, very quickly in a very short period of time. And with musicians who may or may not have ever played with one another before. And the orchestra here changes at every concert and just about every rehearsal. Since you have to program a year ahead of time, you can only go with what you think you're going to have or what you're supposed to have in terms of personnel. But quite often it ends up that the people that you expected to be playing in the principal positions when you programmed the concert or the season, you know, a year later, those people aren't there anymore, or they get a better gig and they cancel. And so then it makes it very difficult in programming.
Well, and things that such as just happened to you in the last week make it difficult and sometimes cause for throwing up your hands in programming. Here's your final concert, and you were going to have a soloist who's been advertised all year long, and then she canceled. So then what do you do?
It's very uncommon, at least in my experience, for the guest artist to cancel. I actually think that this is the first time since I've been here that that has happened. I might be forgetting something, but I don't really remember that happening before. And in this case, it was there was a significant reason for the cancellation. And of course, I was disappointed. I was disappointed primarily because I was really looking forward to meeting Marietta Simpson and working with her. I've heard so many wonderful things about her and followed her career for many years. But on the other hand, in terms of this being my swan song, most conductors, their swan song is repertoire that they choose with the intention of it being their last concert. And it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Well, in this case, the season was programmed, and then I received notice, and then one of the Masterworks concerts was switched around for budgetary reasons. And so this last concert was not programmed with the intention of it being my final concert. And so with her cancellation, I was able to add a couple of pieces. So that's what I did.
And one of those is Sibelius' wonderful Finlandia and also Dvorak's Eighth Symphony. Why did you choose those?
Well, I chose them because they're beautiful. And the Sibelius, I had the hymn from that going over in my mind quite a bit. I was brought up Methodist, and it was a hymn tune that we sang. And, you know, this is a difficult time for me, and I've been relying on my faith and my, fortitude. And so that hymn has been going over in my mind, and that's why I programmed that. But then I realized the significance it had to this actual program, because the program title is Earthly Encounters, but the original program title that I had before it was changed was Peaceful Planet, and I wanted the concert to kind of focus on the planet and what we can do to preserve and protect it in terms of the sea in particular, but in terms of taking care of the sea, taking care of nature, taking care of ourselves by taking care of the planet and paying more attention, because that's very important to me and it's important to most everybody, I would think. And so I realized that the Sibelius, the tune from the Sibelius, is perhaps the most recycled melody, other than the Dies Irae, probably that's ever been used from classical music, because that hymn tune, that melody that he wrote, has gone on to have a life of its own. It's been recycled with numerous and various lyrics for various situations, a lot of them spiritual. You can find it in just about every hymn book you open from any denomination, with all new words depending on the denomination. So I got the idea of recycling. You know, there's different ways to think about music and that was one of them. So I thought that was kind of neat. And the Dvorak, I asked myself, well, which composers do you think of when you think of nature? And Dvorak and Beethoven, you know, were the two obvious ones. And I've always been drawn to Dvorak, and the Eighth is a beautiful symphony and was very special to him. And the timing of it was perfect for the combination, and so I decided to add that. Later, I realized a couple of days ago when I was looking at my score, I had a notation in there from when I had performed it last, and I saw that I last performed it at my audition concert here. But I didn't realize that.
And, well, I want to, before I ask you a little more about the peaceful planet aspect of this, let's hear a little bit from the opening piece of music. And I had not heard this before. I've seen the name of the piece before, and I had in my mind certain idea of what it would sound like, and what it actually does sound like is not at all what I had in mind. So anyway, here's the beginning of a piece that is called Global Warming by a man named Michael Abels, and we'll talk about it a little bit afterwards. It's a performance here by the Chicago Sinfonietta, conducted by Paul Freeman, and it's the Illinois Symphony Orchestra that will open its concerts tonight and tomorrow with it, under the direction of Karen Lynn Deal, who's my guest on this portion of Live and Local. That was just a small portion of a piece by Michael Abels called, Global Warming, with Paul Freeman conducting the Chicago Sinfonietta. And Karen Lynn Deal, who's music director of the Illinois Symphony Orchestra, is going to be conducting it with them tonight and tomorrow. Tonight it's at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts at 8 o'clock, and tomorrow at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield, also at 8 o'clock. As I said, this was not quite the piece, the sound that I would have expected from a title of that name. It sounds a little more jazzy than I thought it would. And Karen, you told me before that you've actually known Mr. Abels for a while and have done the piece before. How does it end up with that sound and that title? How do they go together?
Well, when he wrote it, we were not talking about global warming to the extent that we are today. And he actually wrote the piece because where he lives in California, he said when he opened his windows, he lived in such an ethnically diverse community that he would hear all sorts of different music coming from different people's homes. And he might hear Arabic music, and then, he would hear Irish music, he would hear jazz, he would hear all different sorts of music all at the same time. And it encouraged him to think of global warming not just in a ecological view, but to think of it in terms of warming our spirits and brotherhood and warming up to each other as human beings, and making the planet a better place in that way. And so that's what I love about the piece, because you have the combination of an Irish jig and this Mediterranean Arabic sounds and jazz, and it's fabulous. I just love it.
Well, I'm going to play a short portion of the next piece that's on the program without introduction, and then we'll sort of reveal what's going on a little later. And, well, we'll just leave it at that for now. Except to say it's music by Alan Hovhaness, who's an American composer, now departed, and hearing it on Live and Local. So if you wondered what was going on right there, those were the sound of humpback whales, the sounds of humpback whales incorporated into a piece by Alan Hovhaness called And God Created Great Whales. And that's going to be the second piece on this weekend's concerts by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra. Karen Lindell's conducting. And Karen, I noticed the last line in the bio on your website that I'd never seen before, or at least never paid attention to before. And that is that in addition to playing jazz flute, which I also didn't realize, you spend your summers snorkeling with whale sharks, manta rays, and sea turtles.
Whenever I can.
So you come at this this affinity with water rather naturally, sounds like.
Yes, it's very personal to me. You know, I've done enough of that that I've seen the effects. You know, you can if you snorkel or dive whatever enough and have done it for a number of years, you can see the coral reef starting to die, and you know, what happens is the coral reef has to maintain a certain temperature to be able to survive because it's alive. It's not a plant. It's a living thing. As the water temperature increases, the top of the coral reef that's closest to the surface, that water is warmer than it should be, and that coral dies. And then it's still alive as you descend where the water remains cool. But all of that close to the top, it dies. And it can eventually kill, you know, off other species as well. And for me, the sea is it's another world, like music is another world. And I find it to be a very quiet and spiritual world, and I get a lot of the same emotions and sensations when I am in the sea as I do when I make music. And people keep asking me, you know, well, what are you going to do after this? And I honestly have to say, well, I have no idea where I'm even going to be in 6 weeks from now. You know, once my house sells, that's what I'm waiting for, and then once that sells, I'll leave Springfield, but I don't have any idea where I'm going to go. And one of the things that I've been thinking about, actually, is to maybe try to find a cheap place in Baja, in the whale watching area, and, you know, just take a year and rest and regroup and replenish and, you know, swim with the humpbacks. So, It might turn out, you know, life is a mystery, but it might turn out when I look back on the programming for this concert a year from now that it makes a lot more sense as a swan song than I thought. I'm looking at a difficult situation when I look at it with the common point of view of how you look at situations like this. I mean, I'm scared to death like anybody would be. But I look at the tornado victims and the flood victims and the earthquake and tsunami victims, and I'm just so grateful that I've had the life that I've had and that I've been able to be a part of making beautiful music with wonderful musicians, and hopefully I'll be able to do it again. And if not, then I just have to trust that the energy inside of me that wants to make a difference in the world, we'll find some other outlet.
Well, speaking of making music with musicians, I know you have to go do a rehearsal in just a few minutes here.
Yep.
And so I'd better let you do it. And I just wanted to tell you that I have really enjoyed all the conversations we've had. And I have yet to meet you in person. Well, I did once when we were actually both being given the same award by the Illinois Arts Council, not the Illinois Arts Council, the Illinois Council of Orchestras,
right,
back in 2000. And that was it. So
that was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was. And it's always been great to talk to you, and I've enjoyed them, and I wish you the best luck on these concerts this weekend and also in whatever does happen next.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
There's a portion of the third movement of the Eighth Symphony of Dvorak, which you can hear performed in its entirety by the Illinois Symphony Orchestra tonight in Bloomington and tomorrow night in Springfield, conducted by Karen Lynn Deal in her final concert with that orchestra. Concerts. For more information and times and so on, go to ilsymphony.org. I'm Kevin Kelly. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Quick look at our calendar. The Illinois Superstate Concert Band Festival is going on all day today at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, and again tomorrow starting at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I know we have some local bands participating in that. It's Dirty Rotten Scoundrels being put on by Danville Light Opera tonight at 7:30, tomorrow night at 7:30 as well, and also Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. That's at the Danville Area Community College in Bremer Auditorium. Don't Ask, play klezmer music in Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana tonight at 7 o'clock. Fiddler on the Roof is at Mohammed Seymour High School tonight and tomorrow at 7:30 and a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. It's a Midsummer Night's Dream put on by Rantoul Theater Group at Grissom Hall Theater in Rantoul tonight and tomorrow at 8 o'clock and a Sunday matinee at 2 o'clock. Franklin Middle School presents Into the Woods Junior. That's in Champaign, 7 o'clock tonight and tomorrow night. Judah Christian School in Champaign presents Our Town tonight at 7 o'clock, also tomorrow at 2 and 7. It's the Parkland College In Your Ear Big Band at Cowboy Monkey in downtown Champaign. That's tonight at 6 o'clock, 6:30. The Drowsy Chaperone is put on by the Peoria Players Theater, 7:30 tonight and tomorrow with a Sunday matinee at 2:30. And Sangamon Valley Youth Symphony gives its spring concert on Saturday at 1:30 at Sangamon Auditorium at the University of Illinois Springfield. The Chorale gives its Young Artist Scholarship Concert at Faith United Methodist Church in Champaign tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And the Edison Middle School Concert and Jazz Bands give their annual park concert at Hessel Park in Champaign tomorrow afternoon from 3 until 6. And finally, it's the Millikan University Concert Band and Symphonic Wind Ensemble Sunday afternoon at 2 at the Kirkland Fine Arts Center. Our show today comes in with support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 2 to 6 p.m. in the Bouvant Wine Bar. This Saturday's tasting features Lisa Odom of Maverick Wine Company with 10 wines from her portfolio. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL-FM, and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.